It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
Well, it is great to be with you today, starting off a brand new week. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today. All this week, I have a special teaching I'm going to be sharing with you from the book of Proverbs, opening up some of the key topics and themes in the book of Proverbs as we delight in God's wisdom. Sit back, enjoy the show. I won't be taking calls, although over the course of the show, I'll give you a toll-free number to call for a free resource we want to send out to be a blessing to you. So I'll share more of that later in the show. But here's what I'm planning to do this entire week, and I trust it'll be a blessing to you. I'm going to be doing at the outset of the show some teaching from Proverbs, and then later in the show answering some of the most fascinating email questions that we've received. We'll be doing that through the week, so I trust you'll enjoy it and be blessed. Today also, I'm going to play the closing comments from the debate last week with Professor Bart Ehrman. We each had about 6 minutes to close, so I'm going to play later in the show today Professor Ehrman's closing comments, followed by my closing comments. So again, sit back, enjoy the show. And if you want, you can just pray for blessing on me and my family this week. You say, why? Well, we got a few vacation days, and as you're listening to this specially prepared show, we should be having some fun, Nancy and I, with our younger daughter, her husband, and their two kids, and hopefully next time around with our older daughter, her husband, and their two kids. So, no, you don't need to be in travail. Oh, let's fast. Dr. Brown would have a nice vacation. No, there are plenty of other things to fast and pray for. But hopefully I'll be enjoying my time while you're enjoying this show. Book of Proverbs. I remember years back when I used to suffer badly from hay fever. And I came in the house one day, still living at home with my parents. Came in the house, my eyes were all teared up. I was sneezing, nose running, throat scratchy. And I looked for some allergy medicine to take. And there it lists, you know, this is for a scratchy throat. This is for watery eyes. This is for sneezing. This is for runny nose. This is for allergies. I thought, good, this is it. This is what I need. Well, listen to Proverbs. Listen to Proverbs. See if this is what you need. I certainly do. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a discipline in prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance for understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. But what an invitation, and what a promise with this book. Let me say a few things at the outset. Proverbs is for everyone. It's for those that are simple and lacking in understanding. It's not talking about intelligence. It's talking about lacking in understanding. Proverbs has wisdom for those. For those who are wise with much learning, Proverbs has wisdom and edifying learning yet to come. When it speaks of the fear of the Lord, it's talking about a healthy recognition of who he is and the life that we live in light of who he is. Perhaps I'll be able to open that up further during the week, one of the topics that we'll cover. And when it speaks about fools in Proverbs, it's not talking about someone that's uneducated. It's not talking about someone that is lacking in IQ. It's talking about someone who is morally bankrupt. You can be in the Mensa club, the genius club, because your IQ is so high and you are so brilliant, and yet be a fool. You can have 3 PhDs and yet be a fool. You can be at the top of your class in every academic score that there is and still be a fool. And you can be wise without even being able to read and write, because you know who God is, and you walk in a way that makes sense in light of that, and that brings blessing to your life. Now, what I find fascinating about Proverbs is that the invitation is out here. There's a constant call. Verse 20 of chapter 1, wisdom calls aloud in the street. She raises her voice in the public square. This is not just this hidden thing. Now, in a moment, Proverbs is going to tell us we've got to seek wisdom earnestly. But there's an open invitation. God's saying to all of us through this book, and in many other ways he appeals to us, don't be a fool. Don't destroy your life. Don't waste your life. Follow wisdom. Heed the instruction of God and live. But like anything of value, it must be sought after. Like anything of value, it must be cultivated. If you're just tuning in, all this week, we're doing some special teaching from the book of Proverbs, especially at the beginning of the show, and then later in the broadcast, answering some fascinating email questions. So we are not taking calls, although I'll give you a toll-free number to call later in the show for a free resource that we will be sending out to anyone that requests it. Wisdom must be sought. What does it say in Hebrews 11:6? That the one that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of those who, what? Diligently seek him. So listen to Proverbs 2. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. In other words, this is not just going to fall on your head or my head like a ripe apple falling from a tree. Wisdom gives an open invitation and then says, now come and seek. Now give yourself to finding wisdom. You say, how do I do it? Well, one way is you read Proverbs over and over. Many people make it a life habit, meaning all their lives, that they read one chapter of Proverbs every day, which gets you through the book in a month. If you have a month with 30 days, you just double up a chapter. February, read a couple of extra chapters. And that means you go through Proverbs 12 times in a year. I can assure you that we would all look very different as believers if we did that as a lifestyle and really took in the words and asked God to speak. So dive into Proverbs. And then seek God and ask him for wisdom. Because without wisdom, friends, we could be so gifted. Without this practical knowledge of how to live in a way that makes sense in light of who God is and in light of his standards and commandments, we can have every kind of gift. You could be the most charismatic person in your community. Everybody's like, whoa, she's special, he's special. You could have great looks. You could have great athletic talent, great musical talent. You could have all kinds of knowledge. In fact, sometimes we can have all kinds of knowledge and not have wisdom. Look at what it says in Proverbs 3. My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life and bring you shalom, bring you wholeness and peace. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Look at what it says in Proverbs 3:13. Blessed is the man who finds wisdom, the man or woman who gains understanding. For she's more profitable than silver, yields better returns than gold. She's more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. How much more should we be seeking wisdom than seeking financial gain? How much more should we be seeking wisdom than seeking popularity with people? Listen to Proverbs 4. Solomon's saying, just as a youth, I was taught by my father, lay hold of my words with all your heart, keep my commands and you'll live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or swerve from them. Do not forsake wisdom and she'll protect you. Love her and she'll watch over you. Wisdom is supreme. Therefore, get wisdom. Though it cost all you have, get understanding. And then these verses, chapters 4, verses 20 to 22, my son, pay attention to what I say. Listen closely to my words. Do not let them out of your sight. Keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to a man's whole body. It reminds me of maybe you go into an expensive antique shop or an expensive china shop, and you've got your three-year-old nephew with you who's constant motion like a bull in a china shop, and your sister or brother says, you don't let him out of your sight. Got it. Got it. Don't let him out of your sight. Don't let the words of wisdom out of your sight, because they are life to those who find them, and health, healing. Yes, literally. I believe it's not just spiritually, but literally God's wisdom and following his wisdom can bring health to our bodies. What an invitation to seek wisdom. What an invitation to pursue wisdom. We'll be pursuing that all this week here on The Line of Fire. We come back, you're going to hear the closing comments from last week's great debate, Professor Bart Ehrman and yours truly on the Bible and the problem of suffering. We come back, it'll be Professor Ehrman sharing his closing comments. Stay with us, friends. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you with a special show today and through this week. We're going through passages in the book of Proverbs, exploring the wisdom of God's word and answering some of your most interesting email questions. But today, we're also doing something else, namely playing the closing comments, closing remarks from Professor Bart Ehrman and myself from the debate last week on Does the Bible Provide an Adequate Answer to the Problem of Suffering? Let me dive in right now. This is Professor Bart Ehrman, esteemed New Testament scholar, and also former evangelical believer, now staunch critic of evangelical beliefs. These are the closing comments of Professor Bart Ehrman.
Well, I'd like to thank Michael very much for a very energizing debate. And I hope you all have found it to be of some use for your own thinking. In the Bible, there are different solutions for why they're suffering. Some of these explanations contradict others. Is it because God is punishing people for their sins? That's what the prophets of the Hebrew Bible maintain. But I refuse to think that birth defects, massive starvation, flu epidemics, Alzheimer's disease, and genocides are given by God to make people repent or to teach them a lesson. Other writers and the prophets themselves want to maintain that some suffering is caused because people have the free will to hurt, maim, torture, and kill others. And that's certainly true. But why would God allow human-caused evil in some instances and not others? If he could do miracles for his people throughout the Bible, where is he today when your son is killed in a car accident, or when your husband gets multiple sclerosis, or civil war is unleashed in Iraq, or when the Iranians decide to pursue their nuclear ambitions? Some authors of the Bible believe that suffering was ultimately redemptive, and it's true that there can often be a silver lining in the hardships we encounter. But I just don't see anything redemptive when Ethiopian babies die of malnutrition, or when thousands of people die today and yesterday and the day before of malaria, or when your entire family is brutalized by a drug-crazed gang that breaks in during the middle of the night. Some authors thought of suffering as a test of faith, but I refuse to believe that God murdered or allowed the Satan to murder Job's 10 children in order to see if he would curse him or not. If someone killed your 10 children, wouldn't you have the right to curse him? And to think that God would make up for it to Job by giving him an additional 10 children afterwards is obscene. Some authors, such as the one who wrote the powerful poetic dialogues of Job, maintain that suffering is a mystery. I resonate with this view, but I don't think highly of its corollary, that we have no right to ask about the answer to the mystery, since we are, after all, mere peons, and God is the Almighty. And we have no grounds for calling him to task for what he has done. If God made us, then presumably our sense of right and wrong came from him. If that's the case, there's no other sense of right and wrong but his. If he does something wrong, then he's culpable by the very standards of judgment that he's given us as sentient human beings. And murdering babies, starving masses, and allowing genocides is wrong. Still, I have to admit that at the end of the day, this will sound as a surprise, I do have a biblical view of suffering. As it turns out, it's the view that's put forth in the book of Ecclesiastes. There's a lot we can't know about the world. This is what Ecclesiastes says. A lot of this world doesn't make sense. Sometimes there's no justice. Things don't go as planned or as they should. A lot of bad things happen, but there are also a lot of good things that happen. The solution is to live, the solution to life is to enjoy it while we can because it's fleeting. This is the view of the book of Ecclesiastes. This world and everything in it is temporary, transient, and soon to be over. We won't live forever. In fact, we won't live long. And so we should enjoy life to the fullest, as much as we can, as long as we can. That's what the author of Ecclesiastes thinks, and I agree. The idea that this life is all there is should not be an occasion for despair and despondency, but just the contrary, it should be a source of joy and dreams. Joy of living for the moment and dreams of trying to make the world a better place, both for ourselves and for others in it. This means working to alleviate suffering and bringing hope to a world devoid of hope. The reality is that we can do more in dealing with the problems people face in this world. To live life to the fullest means, among other things, doing more. There does not have to be world poverty. The wealth could be redistributed. There don't have to be people sleeping on my streets in my city of Durham. Children really don't need to die of malaria. Families don't need to be destroyed by waterborne diseases. Villages don't need to die of massive starvation. Old people do not need to go for weeks on end without a single visitor. People do not have to be bigots or racists. Our laws and customs don't have to discriminate on the basis of gender or sexual orientation. By all means, and most emphatically, I think we should work hard to make the world, the one we live in, the most pleasing place it can be for ourselves. We should love and be loved. We should cultivate our friendships, enjoy our intimate relationships, cherish our family lives. We should enjoy good food and wine. Yes, we should. Chocolate, for example. We should eat out and order unhealthy desserts. We should cook steaks on the grill and drink Bordeaux. We should walk around the block, work in the garden, watch basketball, and drink beer. We should travel and read books and go to museums and look at art and listen to music. We should make love, have babies, and raise families. We should do what we can to love life. It's a gift, and it will not be with us for long. But we should also work hard to make our world the most pleasing place it can be for others. Whether this means visiting a friend in the hospital, giving more to a local charity or an international relief effort, volunteering at the local soup kitchen, or expressing our opposition to the violent oppression of innocent people. What we have in the here and now is all that there is. We need to live life to its fullest and help others as well to enjoy the fruits of the land. In the end, we may not have the ultimate solutions to life's problems, but just because we don't have an answer to suffering does not mean that we cannot have a response to it. Our response should be to work to alleviate suffering wherever possible and to live life as well as we can. Thank you very much.
Okay, if you just tuned in and said, who is that? What is that? The Line of Fire? Well, yeah, this is The Line of Fire. Yours truly, Michael Brown here. But you were listening to the closing comments of Professor Bart Ehrman, where actually he read the closing pages of his book, God's Problem, Why He Believes the Bible Does Not Provide an Adequate Answer to Human Suffering. So you heard Professor Ehrman's ultimate response, believing that the biblical answers are contradictory, believing that the best that we can do is, in his mind, the way he reads Ecclesiastes, follow the wisdom of Ecclesiastes, enjoy life while we have it, and enjoy the good life as much as you can, and then try to alleviate suffering from others and for the human race to do better and to improve so we won't be killing each other and being so cruel to each other. Obviously, throughout the debate, we went back and forth over those issues. When we come back, you'll get to hear my closing comments, so stay with us on the special edition of The Line of Fire today. Fire. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. You're listening to a special edition of the show today. I'm not taking live calls, so sit back, enjoy the program. You can always email me, of course, at Dr. Brown, Dr. Brown, at AskDrBrown.org. All this week, we're doing special teaching from the Book of Proverbs. I think it'll be eye-opening, enlightening, helpful, encouraging, maybe even life-changing for many of you, as well as taking some of your most fascinating email questions. But on today's broadcast, we're also playing the closing comments from last week's debate with Professor Bart Ehrman. If you go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire, you'll find the link to the audio debate that you can listen to now. Soon there should be a link to the entire debate to watch for free online. Okay, let's go now to my closing comments. In the debate, does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering?
Thank you so much, Bart. I was expecting a spirited debate, and I was not disappointed. You judge a tree by its fruit, and you see the type of response that will be generated by Bart's teaching. And I don't believe, as sincere as he is about this, that it's going to generate sacrifice, that it's going to generate people giving themselves sacrificially to help people that are hurting. And although we both use the word obscene a number of times, I do find the counsel obscene for most of the world's suffering people. The people in grinding poverty hear about a new book that came out dealing with the problem of suffering, and they get it with eager hands, and someone's able to get them a copy of it, and they get to the end and they begin to read, and it says grill steaks and eat unhealthy desserts. They've never had a square meal in their lives. How in the world does that possibly come with a compassionate, reasonable answer to the problem of suffering? And once again, we're in a narcissistic society. I was flying here and talking to someone on the plane about the debate, or flying in New York before this, and I was talking about the debate back and forth. They found it fascinating. So I said, here, read the answer. And the fellow got mad. He said, we don't need more narcissism. We don't need more. It's about me. And that's what's killing our country. Judge a tree by its fruit. And then read the whole of the book of Ecclesiastes. Yes, enjoy life. Yes, enjoy the good things you can. Yes, enjoy time with your family and cultivate friendships. But read to the end of the book, read the last chapter that says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. The book comes to a climax saying, it's more than this. Old Testament scholar said it to me like this the other day. The overall message of Ecclesiastes is that living without God is not living at all. And as for asking why, the Bible encourages us to ask. As I said earlier, it puts the words down and says, use these to bring your complaint against God. But let's remember perspective, friends. In creation, there's day first and then night. You come to the end of Psalm 88, and it closes with the words, darkness is my closest friend. Sometimes that's our experience in life. It ends, and the chapter is dark, but the next chapter, the next psalm, begins with hope and life. Weeping may endure for a night, joy comes in the morning. I don't know if the camera can come in on this, but here's a little needle point here, and maybe you can make out something on the bottom. Maybe you could make out, looks like a building or a church or a steeple or something. There's something quite obscure written on top. That's our perspective here. That's this world's perspective. Pain, suffering, death, inexplicable things happening. It seems random. It seems out of control. How can there be a God like that and a world like this? And those are the very questions the Bible answers. But see, from God's perspective, he's doing something. And there it is written beautifully across the top. It's meaningless here. It's gibberish here. But there it is. Everything is possible with God. In fact, let me present this to you as a memento of the debate, sir. And that was spontaneous, perhaps an altruistic thing that you would not have done for me. Present me with a needle point that everything is possible with God. So let's look at this. And again, I want to say again, in no way do I fault Bart for losing his faith. And in no way do I find your answer unreasonable from your perspective, sir. But ultimately, here's what you have. You lose God. You lose the comfort and reality that God can bring in this world. You bring his intervention, and let me tell you, he is intervening on a regular basis around the world. Maybe not as much as we like, but he is intervening. You take away his intervention. You take away his comfort. You take away his redemptive work. You take away his reality and the fellowship we enjoy with him. You take away the world to come and offer me Bordeaux and unhealthy desserts. No, thank you. I will stay with God and his reality and his promises and his wonders. And they are real. Ultimately, as I really chewed on this, I realized that what we have is Bart's problem, which is the problem of the human race, and God's solution. In fact, I was just thinking of these two books, God's Problem, which probably sold more books than anything I've written, and The Solution. And really, when I look at this book, some of the things Bart wrote in it, the problem of suffering became for me the problem of faith. He speaks of those that have a faith in God and look at the mystery of it and says, I respect this view deeply, and some days I wish I shared it. He writes in his book that he has an amazing life, but he has no one for which to be thankful. This is a deep void, he writes, inside me, a void of wanting someone to thank, and I don't see any plausible way of filling it. Even candid enough to say in his book that he would sometimes wonder, what if I was right then but wrong now? Will I burn forever? The fear of death gripped me for years, and there are still moments when I wake up at night in a cold sweat. And I thought, you know, this is Bart's problem. This book represents Bart's problem and the problem of the human race. This represents God's solution. And with my heart and my soul, I give myself to God's solution, and I commend God's solution to you. I taught at the seminary in California last week, and I had a student, former police officer in 1987, was broadsided by a logging truck and almost killed. His spleen exploded, multiple injuries. On life support, they had to give him pour so much drugs into him, it destroyed his retinas. He's basically blind, has to be led by the hand, and suffered terribly, a diabetic, on and on and on. He was not a believer when that happened, and I said, what was your experience then? He said, it felt like absolute, utter abandonment. And I said, now how is it with God? He hasn't been healed yet. How is it with God? He said, it's like having the parent right there with the child. This man, full of joy, full of life, full of hope, full of grace, even started a company to help handicapped people get places for work. I look at it and I say again, we have Bart's problem. We have God's solution. Once more, I commend to you God and his solution. Thank you so much.
All right, so that was the end of the debate. Closing comments from Professor Ehrman and from myself. And I'd really encourage you to listen to the audio. We have a link on our website. I think we even have someone just with their own video camera took the closing comments of mine. Those are probably on YouTube, just shot those on video. But it's important to look at these issues, friends, because they're issues that touch everyone. And as we look at the book of Proverbs through the week, we'll find that God's wisdom speaks to us where we live. You're just tuning in, Michael Brown here with a special edition of The Line of Fire this week, but it'll be a special edition through the entire week as we open up the book of Proverbs together, as we look at key subjects. In fact, tomorrow, I believe, we'll focus on the issue of self-control, temper. That's where we'll go tomorrow. Next segment is a free resource we want to send out to all of you listening, and I'm going to start to get into email questions. So all through the week, book of Proverbs, fascinating questions that you, the listeners, have sent in. Enjoy the broadcast. May the Lord minister to each of you. Send the fire today. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire, Michael Brown. Blessed, as always, to be with you. We've got a special edition of The Line of Fire today, and all through this week, I'm going to be opening up the book of Proverbs with you, looking at some key themes in the book of Proverbs. If you missed the beginning of the show today, we gave the invitation for Proverbs, the call, the promise. And it's just amazing as you read those opening chapters of Proverbs, how God draws us in and what he promises to those that will earnestly seek his wisdom. But through the week, special teaching on Proverbs and then answering some of your most fascinating email questions. And today we also played the closing comments from the debate last week with Professor Ehrman and myself on does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of human suffering. I would like to send out as a gift to everyone listening, whether you're listening to this live, whether you're listening later on podcast, whether you are listening and a tape delay broadcast in another part of the country, I'd love to send you a free copy of the 5,000-word Jesus Manifesto, a little red booklet that lays out the urgency of the hour and God's calling on us as his people. This is for everyone living within the United States. I want to send this out free and postage paid. Here's how you get it. Call 888-378-FIRE. It's that simple. 888-378-3473. If the lines are jammed or you're calling at a time, different time zone, when we're not in the office, just leave us your name and address, and we will joyfully send out a Jesus Manifesto to you. Okay, let me get to some interesting email questions. This is one from Jose. Hey, Dr. Brown, first off, I want to thank you for what you do for the Lord. Your podcasts have been a tremendous blessing for me. I greatly admire your radio program and how you tackle the controversial issues in the body and in society. You've encouraged me to stand up boldly for the Lord and live a holy life. You've also given me a new perspective on the Jews and have encouraged me to pray for them constantly. Jose, thank you, sir. That means a lot to me. That's very encouraging to hear. Okay, Jose's question. I have a question regarding receiving the new life in Messiah Jesus and forsaking the old one. Let's say a man committed murder and then a year later came to Messiah. Now, the family of the victim is still in agony because they have not yet received justice for the loss of their loved one. Would the born-again Christian be obliged to turn himself in order to bring justice to the family of the loved one? That is my question, but I believe that we as Christians have a new life in Messiah and the old one is gone, as written in 2 Corinthians 5:17. Personally, if justice was necessary, I would have to turn myself in because I still have in my possession items that I have stolen. Consequently, I would end up in jail, and that is not a good witness for Messiah. I hope that you'll be able to answer my question. Thank you for your time. God bless. Actually, Jose, I do believe it's important that we make things right as much as possible. We can be forgiven of our sins, absolutely, but there are consequences to our sins. Without question, if someone was guilty of murder and then came to faith, without question, they would need to turn themselves in, and that would be an extraordinary witness of a changed life in Jesus. And God can then use that person in prison to be a witness. Now, I have to be candid. When I got saved, there was no consciousness of this in my mind whatsoever. A couple of houses I had broken into, a doctor's office I had broken into and stolen some things. There was no consciousness in my mind whatsoever that I was supposed to do anything like go back to the people or confess or make restitution. Later on, I did meet someone, and it was her mother's house that I had broken into, and I told them what happened, and I was the person. They didn't really care about it. It was not an issue to them, but I did that. One of my friends got saved, and he had been a drug dealer for the Grateful Dead. And when he got saved, he had a sack in his closet with something like $100,000 cash from drug dealing. So he asked the Lord, "What do I do with this?" And the Lord spoke to him and said, "Give it to Teen Challenge." I thought that was the voice of God. Give it to Teen Challenge. If you're not able to figure out what happened, who you did things to, if you have items that were stolen, as at the very least, I mean, I still try to bring something back and lay it on a doorstep, you know, but at the very least, figure out a way to return them and ask the Lord, do you need to go to those people face to face and say, 3 years ago, before I was a believer, I stole these things. I'm a changed person. I want to give them back. What would you like me to do? Do you want me to go to the police and put it in God's hands? That being said, if you feel that it's impossible to do those things, then by all means, take those stolen items, turn them into something good, and give it to charity, give it somewhere to help. But if there's a way to make things right with the people, do it. Hey, look, if I stole your car and then got saved a month later, if I was truly saved, you'd expect me to give that car back, wouldn't you? True repentance, true restitution with complete forgiveness, and that's part of our new life in Jesus, and he'll turn evil things for good.
It's fire we want for fire.
Thanks Thanks for joining us today on the special edition of The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you all through this week, doing teaching from the Book of Proverbs and answering some of your most fascinating email questions. So I'm not taking live calls, but by all means, email me your thoughts, your questions at Dr. Brown, that's drbrown, at askdrbrown.org. And if you've never received our Jesus Manifesto, here's a toll-free number to call, 888-378-FIRE. That's 888-378-3473. If you don't speak to a live person, just leave your name and address, and we will send you free and postage paid my 5,000-word Jesus Manifesto. Okay, Ron asks, Dr. Brown, Jesus and an unnamed Samaritan woman at Jacob's well. He tells her that it matters not where one worships. So my question is, does one need to be affiliated with a certain religion or church to be doing God's will and living the life he requires from us? I find myself in doubt in my faith if I'm doing it right in God's eyes, and I'm truly afraid of messing it up. I've been told that faith without works is dead, but is that the works, the way we live our lives in tune with the faith, or is it preaching work or both? But it bothers me to see and hear religious claims that there is the only way. I know we need to live a life to God, whole heart, soul, and mind, that we need to worship God in spirit and truth. To me, if one from their heart seeks God for relationship and stability and wisdom, that the truth in that worship will be the actions of one's way of life. One does it will show it. That is what I get from Jesus' teachings, to seek wisdom of knowledge and to love all as yourself. So to me, it's the person that matters, not a specific church or religion, for we ourselves, inside our hearts and minds, is what matters. What is your opinion? Also, does one need to be baptized? Thanks, I enjoy watching your debates and your website. Hey, Ron, thank you. Thank you for your honest question. Okay, I agree with part of what you're saying, that the ultimate issue is a changed life because we love God and we follow him, that it affects our entire life. Absolutely, I agree with that. But is there only one way? Oh, Ron, for sure. Just think of this. Do you remember the account in the Gospels, Jesus in the what's called the Garden of Gethsemane? He's about to be betrayed and die, which means he's going to take on his shoulders the sins of the entire world. And he says, Father, if there's any other way to do it, except for this, let this cup pass for me. If not, I'll drink it. I'll take this on myself. And he has to do it. Why did Jesus go to the cross? Why did he die for the sins of the world if there was another way? If we could be saved through Buddhism, or if we could be saved through what we now know as traditional Judaism, or if we could be saved through our own seeking of God, or Hinduism, or some type of other religion or faith or cult or non-religion, if we could be saved, if our sins could be forgiven, if we could truly come to know God, why did he have to die? Why did he have to shed his blood? And since this same one who shed his blood and died said, in words that are so famous among Christians, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And then Peter, a Jew, is telling his Jewish people shortly after this, telling the Jewish council and leadership, the only name by which we can be saved is the name of Yeshua, Jesus, the Messiah. Absolutely. It is only through him. And absolutely, you should find others of like heart and mind in your city and worship with them. In fact, the Bible commands us to. This way you know God together. This way you walk with God together. You strengthen one another. You protect one another. And especially as you're new in the faith, you need teachers and leaders to help guide you deeper in God. So it's personal, but it's corporate as well. And once you're absolutely sure that Jesus is Savior and Lord, and you submit your life to him and ask him to forgive you, yes, you should be baptized. It's the public sign. It's the outward sign. It is the outward profession of an inward change, and it is required by God. Yeah, there's junk out there, there's deception out there, but there are plenty of fine people who love the Lord have been changed. Get with them. If you need some guidance in the city where you are, drop us an email, Ron, and we'll be happy to help. You be blessed. Back with you tomorrow.